All right, real talk now. It's getting real. All those podcasts we did before today, they don't matter. Just delete them. Don't even bother listening. It's time for that's not true. Time for position previews. Welcome, everybody. We're starting with catchers. The catcher preview, a.k.a. wah, wah.
We're starting on the wrong foot here.
We always start with catcher. You know, it's kind of easy. Then we'll probably do relief pitcher, and then we'll get into the more fun positions.
Really starting with the crud.
Yeah. Oof. But that'll be next week, by the way. Looking like we're going to do a mailbag show tomorrow on Friday, and then take a little three-day weekend and come back with some more position previews. That's Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. This is Heath Cummings. Hello, Heath.
What is going on? I reject the premise that we're starting off with catcher and that's a bad thing. It's a great thing. This is a chance for you to get a huge edge on your league by being good at catcher.
How many people can do that?
There might be a third of the league that could have a good catcher this year.
Yeah, there you go. There were actually a lot of catchers last year who had surprisingly good seasons. Like both guys on the Braves finished as top 13 catchers. Austin Barnes,
I would suggest that we should not say top 13 catcher means they had a good season.
But individually they had a good season.
Right. Well,
they just didn't play that much.
Right.
Yes. Well, yeah. But I thought like Yadier Molina had a surprisingly good season. Mike Zunino had a surprisingly good season. Robinson Chirinos.
They
Suzuki
show up
Flowers.
Surprisingly high in the rankings.
But they had, a lot of these guys had career years. Alex Avila had a much better year than what we expected. And still they weren't really impactful for fantasy, which just kind of says something about catcher, right?
Yeah. No, there were five impactful catchers, six impactful catchers in fantasy last year, I feel like. With maybe McCann being on the fringe as a seventh.
James McCann, what's the stat? James McCann, oh no, it was actually Alex Avila. And McCann had a lot of hard contact. Did you know that Alex Avila had the second highest hard contact rate in baseball?
I did.
Behind J.D. Martinez.
And I was excited he signed with the Diamondbacks to be a primary catcher, and now he's going to make soft contact because everybody's going to make soft contact there because the balls are waterlogged.
Yeah. All right. Our Humidor show was yesterday. So as we get into catchers here, your emails, by the way, we won't read them today, but we'll read them tomorrow on Friday. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. I think we should go through the point-per-game leaders. We've never really done that before in the position preview, Scott, but it's something you drop that knowledge a lot, and it's not gospel. It doesn't mean that that's how they're going to finish this year, but I think it could be helpful since so many guys have so many different games played and played appearances, just to know who was best on a per-game basis. I don't even know if Gary Sanchez was number one last year.
Oh, yes. He was far and away number one with 3.38. Number two...
Oh, but tell me real quick why he was so much better than Wilson Contreras, because on a plate appearance basis, I feel like they were pretty close. In fact, they were very close. Maybe he got pulled early. I don't know. Contreras didn't have as many appearances per game.
I do think definitely playing for the Cubs and in the National League, itself to playing a lot more partial games.
Okay. All right, Scott, go on.
Sanchez number one. Number two will probably shock you. It was Kurt Suzuki.
Wow, yeah.
3.04. And, you know, this probably isn't as relevant at catcher because normalizing playing time doesn't make much sense at this format since there's so many split roles like Kurt Suzuki. But, you know, just for the sake of putting it out there, Kurt Suzuki was number two. Buster Posey was three. Brian McCann was four. Yadier Molina, five. Evan Gattis. Then Wilson Contreras. Salvador Perez. JT Realmuto. Robinson Chirinos. Wellington Castillo.
One more time. Give me the list again.
Gary Sanchez, Kurt Suzuki, Buster Posey, Brian McCann, Yadier Molina, Evan Gattis, Wilson Contreras, Salvador Perez, JT Realmuto, and if you want a couple more, Robinson Chirinos, Wellington Castillo.
All right.
We need to do some serious maneuvering/adjusting on Wilson Contreras' per game numbers. He had 22 appearances where he did not start the game. So he played 117 games, 95 of those as a starter. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that you normalize that, and as a starter, he was the second-best catcher, and it was much, much closer to Sanchez.
Well, on a per-plate appearance basis, it was nearly identical.
It would be hard for him to top Austin Barnes if you're just factoring in starts, because Austin Barnes was exactly the same as Evan Gattis, if you just remove all his...
Evan Gattis?
Sorry, as Gary Sanchez on a per game basis if you remove his reserve appearances.
Now, one other thing to keep in mind is that Gary Sanchez doesn't have great plate discipline, 40 walks to 120 strikeouts. So that means his fantasy points per game, or just fantasy points in general, might not be as high as his roto value. He was the number one catcher in both formats, but you know, this is just points, and also Sanchez barely doubled. He had, I think, 20 doubles. So this is just points. Roto is a little bit different. Keep that in mind. Some stats to know about catchers. Well, Gary Sanchez was the number one catcher in fantasy in both points and roto. He played 122 games. If he had played, so basically he missed a sixth of his season. Right? He missed just under a month. I gave him an extra sixth, basically. Although maybe I should have given him an extra fifth because he played. I don't know. Anyway, he would have had the best year at catcher since Buster Posey in 2012.
You should have given him an extra fifth. So even
so
better
it would have been
Buster
even better.
Posey,
yeah, yeah. I gave him an extra sixth.
Yeah.
I should have given him an extra fifth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he would have had like over 500 fantasy points, which is a great year. But as it stands, Gary Sanchez was the number 77 hitter in points, number 46 in roto, and he was the best. I think there were two catchers who were in the top 100 of hitters. We know what this position is. So I guess that lends the question, what's your strategy? What is your overall catcher strategy?
I haven't been making a heavy investment in catcher this year. I've just been taking the best of what's left. And you know, maybe Austin Barnes is the guy who I'm willing to reach a little for, but we're still talking the late rounds at that point. Yasmani Grandal's there yet, so I don't think people have totally caught on to the idea that Barnes is probably the Dodgers' primary catcher and could be really good in that role. But otherwise, like, I understand the appeal of reaching for Sanchez. It just seems like to ensure that you get him, it has to be round two, and there's so many high-end bats that feel safer to me at that stage of the draft.
I am going to be fascinated to see. Now, Chris won't be in our auction today. We've got an AL-only auction. And I will be very curious to see what Gary Sanchez's price is related to the rest of the field. My general strategy had been just wait and wait and wait and take Evan Gattis. I may change that to wait and wait and wait and take Wilson Ramos now. Looking at his average draft position, it's really late. It's 200 overall.
We need ADP boy here.
Yeah, I'm looking at ADP right now. Looks like it's 200.7 is the average of the three. The highest is 161 is his ADP, so around 14.
And what number off the board is Wilson? He's 11th. He's
11th.
The number 11 catcher. So, all right. Let me run down the list of ADP real quick here. I won't tell you where they're going. I just we'll get into that. I just want to know how many of them you'd feel comfortable with as your starting catcher. Obviously, Gary Sanchez, Wilson Contreras, Buster Posey, JT Realmuto, feel comfortable with, right?
Yeah, of course.
Had a very good year last year. Really did.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of boring, but that's boring is good at catcher.
Salvador Perez.
Yep.
Evan Gattis.
Yep.
Gets a little tricky after that. Yadier Molina.
Yeah, I feel comfortable. I mean, I'm not enthused, but I'm comfortable.
He's old JT Realmuto.
Yep.
Mike Zunino is the number 8 catcher off the board.
I don't feel comfortable with him. I know he is kind of a trendy industry pick.
I think that the comfort is the problem. I have no comfort with him, but he is part of a different class of catchers that I could absolutely see finishing the year as a top 5 catcher.
Okay,
I could also see him being in the minor leagues again.
Yeah, I mean, he had a 355 BABIP last year. He's usually like a 200 hitter. And often goes to the minors.
I would put Austin Barnes in that same class with Zunino.
Of you're just not that comfortable?
Yeah, because I'm not that comfortable that he's the regular catcher for the Dodgers.
Yeah, definitely could be a trade there. We'll keep an eye on it. And he did start. Austin Barnes did start 13 of 15 postseason games.
Yes.
That goes along.
It pretty much just started in the postseason. Okay, he's our primary catcher over Grandal. It was kind of a 60-40 split with Grandal taking the lead down the stretch. But yeah, it was pretty evident to me by postseason usage that Barnes is the one they want back there. But Grandal himself is too good to just make a backup.
Right.
So it'll be
and we've got a We've got a quote on that, right?
Yes, Dave Roberts said that. Well, let me get the quote. Dave Roberts said, quote, Yasmani had more playing time and at-bats last season, and I see that again, but Austin has earned the opportunities. That was yesterday. That was February 13th or 14th, so yeah. A lot can change.
He also tried to say Matt Kemp was going to be good on defense because he has something to play for. So Dave Roberts is just spewing all kinds of BS.
I think what Dave Roberts is probably right. Matt Kemp didn't try that hard for the Braves last year.
Maybe.
He should try harder because he's playing for something.
Well, okay, so I used to just kind of take catcher like, well, if I didn't get Buster Posey, I wouldn't mind being in a 12-team league, the 12th guy to take a catcher. I think I might want to be like the 6th or 7th guy to take a catcher if I don't get Gary Sanchez. I don't know that I want to rely on Brian McCann or Austin Barnes or Yasmani Grandal. You know, in a normal year, I'd be fine with Grandal. But I don't want to rely on Jonathan Lucroy or Wellington Castillo or Mike Zunino. These guys are top 10 catchers in ADP. Mm-hmm. I think we all would go a little bit out of the ADP order, from like 7 on.
Right.
So I'm not saying that you have to go by what ADP is right now. Just go look at our rankings. But I don't know. There are certainly not 12 catchers that I'm comfortable with. Of course, I do know that there will be multiple people in each fantasy league that have, basically nothing at catcher. So it's not a huge deal. Right.
Right. And there will be, there will be catchers who I think, in a league where everybody just has one catcher spot to fill, all right, people aren't going to double up at catcher. There's never a scarcity in one catcher leagues of catchers that you could plug into your lineup. Not saying they'll be good, but they'll be comparable to what some of the worst teams at catcher have at catcher. So it's hard. You're rarely going to have like a disaster scenario at catcher where you're just getting blown out there every week. And part of the reason why I don't want to make an investment in like a JT Realmuto, who, I know isn't going to be a huge difference maker. He's just going to be a little better than what half the league's probably going to have, is because I can fall back on, just making do with the position in a way that's not really going to set me apart in a bad way, and hope that because there is so many starting catchers on the waiver wire, because every team has only one, that there's a breakout that nobody even sees coming, and I can capitalize on that. Maybe Mike Zunino miraculously cuts down on his strikeouts this year, or maybe James McCann, who has some interesting batted ball data, he has a legit breakout now with Alex Avila out of the way. So, that's part of the reason why I don't want to make a big investment in what's probably going to be a boring option if I'm not getting Gary Sanchez or Buster Posey.
Okay, Heath, you really had me on the Evan Gattis train for a while.
I was really on the Evan, and I'm not totally off the Evan Gattis train yet either. I still think, I still believe mostly everything I said. What really throws me off, though, is playing time concerns. Mm-hmm. And I have more of those than I did. The Astros, like Dave Roberts, have said a lot of things this offseason about guys they would like to play regularly. They would like for Evan Gattis to be their everyday DH, is what they've said. Now, not every day, but regular DH.
Primary.
They would like to give Derek Fisher a chance to be their starting left fielder. Those two things don't work very well if Yuli Gurriel is their starting first baseman and Josh Reddick is starting in the outfield and Marwin Gonzalez is playing on a regular basis. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Gattis gets 400 at-bats?
I do.
Yeah, if he had gotten 400 at-bats based on what he did last year, he would have been the number 7 catcher in points leagues. He only had 300 at-bats last year. And we saw him be the number 2 catcher in points in both formats in 2015, top 5 in 2016. Gattis doesn't need that many at-bats to make a difference.
Well, 400 at-bats is a lot of at-bats for a catcher.
It's not a ton, though. It's not like an unreasonable, like 500 is a lot.
It'd only be like
five guys who do that.
If a catcher gets 500 at bats, he's
probably gonna be top five
almost by default.
Yes.
It sounds like this was my fear with Gattis all along. While I wasn't on the Gattis train from the beginning, because I was, even before the idea that Derek Fisher could win a lot of the starts and left, there was a concern that you know, if they put Gattis at DH every day, that meant they were putting Marwin Gonzalez in left field every day, and that's a waste of Marwin Gonzalez's versatility. And that's something AJ Hinch said he didn't want to do. He wanted to use the DH spot to rest other players and move Marwin Gonzalez all over. So yeah, I think there's a limit to the number of at bats Gattis can get this year. I also think he's going to get 400.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's going to get 500 or more.
Where I've gone is from I'm going to draft Evan Gattis in every draft, and I have him ranked as a top three catcher, to he's still undervalued. I'm still going to get a lot of him, but I don't want to have all of the Evan Gattis.
Okay, Gattis is in points, 7th for Scott, 6th for Heath. In Roto, 6th for Scott, 4th for Heath. So we'll get back to Gattis and other guys. So that's, you know, your overall catcher strategy. And then this follow-up question, the earliest you'll take a catcher, which is obviously, I mean, for most people, it's Gary Sanchez. Heath still has Posey ahead of Sanchez in points leagues.
Yes.
The plate discipline is a big, big factor there. Posey's basically 1-1 walk to strikeout. Sanchez 1-3 walk to strikeout. So that's, you know, it's a big deal. But how early? I know I asked you this during our mic check. I didn't ask you on the air yet, did I? When you would take Gary Sanchez?
I would take Gary Sanchez like in the middle of round three. And that so far that's been I never get. League.
Are you saying are you saying you would take him at the same place in a two catcher roto league as a one catcher head to head league?
Yes, I would.
Because I would take Gary Sanchez in the second round of a two catcher roto league, the end of the second.
See, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that he isn't more valuable in the one catcher leagues because you're getting a clearer advantage in a one-catcher league than you are in a two-catcher league because so much crap is going to be started at catcher in a two-catcher league.
And you're not starting that crap in at least one of those spots. Some people are going to start crap in two different catcher positions.
Sure.
I'm just saying,
like, there's going to be so much... so many catchers that are just canceling each other out in one catcher league.
What I noticed,
and Gary Sanchez is one who definitively is more than just canceling.
Yeah, let's talk generally about the two catcher league versus one catcher league and how your strategies change. And if you're in a 12 team or even a 10 team two catcher league, at what point in the catcher rankings do you get to just these are terrible players? I need two of at least the top 16, or what? You know, I'm just throwing out a totally random number. How do you approach a two-catcher league? And I know not that many people play in two-catcher leagues, so let's do this sort of quickly. But how do you approach it? How does it change? High-end, low-end, whatnot.
I might take two catchers before Scott takes one.
Yeah?
Yeah, it sounds like that. And I've always kind of been of the mindset that the elite catchers have a bigger benefit in a one-catcher league than a two-catcher league. And I know that sounds kind of backwards, but hopefully I explained the reason behind
that well. I don't
understand
it.
Okay, so okay, I didn't.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't understand it yet.
Okay. 17 is how far I go at catcher because Francisco Mejia, I have 18th. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously like, he's not going to be with the Indians to start the season probably. I just like the upside there and think he could end up getting a lot of at-bats later on. So 17, that goes through James McCann and Russell Martin. I'd be fine with those as my second catcher.
Okay.
You want
to dominate in the two-catcher league? You want to dominate the position?
It depends on if... like I feel like most people are working off of rankings that are based on a one-catcher league in terms of where they have catchers ranked in their top 300. I think catchers fall too far in two catcher leagues. And if that happens and I'm taking my second catcher who is Wellington Castillo and he's available in the teens rounds, which he often is.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to take Wellington Castillo because I don't see the point in waiting another five or six rounds so that I can have Manny Pena.
Right. You don't want to be awful. You don't want guys who are part-time players or I don't want like Matt Wieters.
Yeah, he's outside of my top 17.
Agreed.
Yeah, he's been just awful lately. But you could go with both Dodgers catchers. Interesting strategy. You could wait even longer and take both Braves catchers. Although let's be 100% honest, Kurt Suzuki.
Yeah,
where
I
the hell did
that
come from?
I wouldn't
from
do
last
that.
Year?
Like Dodgers, I understand because you're hoping Grandal gets traded at some point. Flowers and Suzuki are both outside of that 17.
But
range.
Even if you take both Dodgers catchers, you probably have two top 12 to 14 guys.
You know what?
Like, then you're good at the position.
You know what I found? Well, assuming things play out like they did last year, you know what I found myself wanting to do at times is take both McCanns just because I like the value of them. Not, you know, I'd rather have Austin Barnes than Brian McCann, but if that doesn't work out, like, I, you know, Brian McCann's going to get you 20 homers. James McCann, I think, has a good chance of giving you 15 homers, and they both should have, you know, neither is going to absolute, like, neither has that Mike Zunino batting average issue going on.
Scott, real quick list of players that you think are better in points than Roto. Posey?
Real Muto is the first one that comes to mind. Yeah, Posey also, sure.
Ramos.
Wilson Ramos? I don't know. He hits you enough home runs, I think, to be just as valuable and should be respectable with the batting average.
I'd go ahead and say Yadier Molina, because he plays so much. Yep. Plate appearances matter.
Potentially Lucroy. I'm kind of worried Lucroy's not even going to be a starter somewhere, to be honest.
I want to talk about him. I think he's interesting. Just something interesting about him. We'll get to it.
And provided something happens to give Barnes regular playing time, as much as he walks and as little as he strikes out, I think he would be especially a head-to-head stud. He'd be good in both, but especially head-to-head.
Heath, do you have guys that stand out to you as better in Roto?
Gattis.
Yeah.
For sure. He is the McCann. Both of the Astros. Zunino.
Okay. Yeah, Zunino for sure.
Right.
Yeah. And Zunino's going to hurt your batting average, but he's not going to get... Catchers don't get the types of plate appearances that are, you know, are going to weigh on your batting average as much as like a regular guy who's playing 150 games because they sit.
But they still, like, you It'll watch... hurt. And one thing I do, and I think it kind of annoys Scott sometimes, but we have... during
you?
Our Roto drafts... You can go into the league, to the stats page, and go down to team totals and check to see what everybody has in home runs, what everybody has in batting average so far through the draft. And so I will keep that open as a personal reference, but also so that when anytime Scott's in last in a category, I can tell him, man, you're really terrible at this.
He gets in my head.
But he could do that.
But
the
thing about
I start drafting for the projections, which is stupid because I don't even believe in the projections. Like, I just want to make it look better so Heath will get off my case.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes, perfect. but it is instructive in a way as well. Because if you have a team that's not filled either of their catcher spots, they're probably going to be in the top three in batting average. And then you're going to see that even though it doesn't make as big a difference as an average player does, their batting average is going to drop considerably when they fill those two catcher slots.
All right. You can let's get into ADP, sleepers, breakouts, busts.
Real quick. Because I think I thought of a better way to explain why I like the elite catchers more in one catcher formats. And it's because one catcher formats you have you have fewer hitter spots to fill.
Yeah, this is easy. Much it's because they're shallower and one player makes a bigger impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's getting a clear impact at any position is going to matter more when you have fewer positions to fill.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, but I do it better understand it now.
Okay,
I think I do agree with that. But yes, I can see both sides there. All right, favorite sleeper catcher, Heath.
How deep do we need to go for sleepers?
I don't. It's the world is.
I'll go really deep.
Is your oyster?
I'll say Steven Vogt.
That is
deep.
Wow,
okay.
That's a deep sleeper. He's not in my top 24 catchers, but I do think in a mixed two-catcher league, you could make an argument for having him in a reserve spot because if Steven Vogt, I don't think he's particularly likely to get 400 at-bats, but if Steven Vogt did get 400 at-bats, he might be a top 6 or 7 catcher at Miller Park.
Steven Vogt batted .328 with a .625 slugging percentage at Miller Park last year. Scott, give me a sleeper.
So I kind of want to go Mejia here, but I assume we're going to talk about prospects later. I am actually going to go, and this is unexciting, but it's catcher, James McCann, who I mentioned some of the batted ball trends for him before. You're going to say he's a Tiger, right?
He's a Tiger.
Oh, that's true. It's a good point.
Like I saw in Adam's notes, he had something about Alex Avila and what a great year he had in terms
but
of contact.
It's one thing to be a little skeptical of the career high hard contact rate, which was close to 40, which is very good. His line drive rate was 28.2 last year.
Yeah.
Also, like, league-leading stuff. And he only had a .300 BABIP. you know, he's not a guy who strikes out a lot. It seems like there's a lot more batting average potential here than the 253 he hit last year. He also had a career high ISO last year. So, you know, he's 27 years old now. He's shown he's at least a decent power hitter, 13 home runs and 391 plate appearances last year. Again, with Avila out, I think there's the potential here for like a 275, 280, 20 homer season from James McCann that nobody's going to see coming. And I'm not saying like that's my expectation for him, but I just see the potential for it.
I don't usually give sleepers breakouts busts, but I would just want to nominate someone because I don't think we'll talk about him. Chris Iannetta. Now he's on the Rockies. Is he a sleeper?
I don't think he's going to play enough. They always, every team he's been with has typically focused on playing him against lefties, which doesn't mean that's all he's going to play against, but they still have Tony Walters, who's a left-handed hitter. So I think he's going to be about the same as he was for Arizona last year.
Where did he finish? I'm sorry, because he slugged 5.11. I'll take a look at where he finished. Go ahead, Heath.
Just back to the Tigers thing real quick, because I didn't want to speak out of turn or say this without some sort of confirmation. I'm not so sure that the he's a Tiger thing is totally limited to hard contact. There were a lot of high line drive rates, and Miguel Cabrera had a career high line drive rate last year.
That's part of what we talk about every time we talk about Miguel Cabrera.
I'm just saying I don't know if that's real either.
Iannetta was the number 23 catcher in points leagues, number 18 in Roto. So not that good. You know, I mean, and on a per game basis, he was good. He had 17 home runs in 89 games, but just mashes lefties. But I would say that if you're in a two catcher league, like I'd be happy taking Iannetta as my number two catcher in one of the final rounds because I think he'll probably finish top 24. You know, with not much upside because he doesn't play that many games. Your favorite breakout catcher, Scott? You can go first here.
Austin Barnes, who, again, I mean, the key stat for him is in his starts last year, he averaged as many fantasy points per game as Gary Sanchez. And in a way that's totally believable, looking at his minor league track record, it looks like everything just carried over from that seamlessly. Very good on-base guy, doesn't strike out much, above average power for a catcher.
Steals, too.
He does run a little bit. He actually is eligible at second base, which is another avenue for him to get at bats, even though obviously you'd never play him there in fantasy. So he's an athletic catcher. He's one the Dodgers clearly like, and I just hope they can find a way to get Grandal out of the way.
Yeah, it's tough. Barnes slugged 5.14 against lefties. I got to double check on this. This could be a typo, but I got him at 3.59 against righties. So it seems like an easy platoon split. Also, he's 28, and I'm thinking his minor league numbers, he's probably pretty old when he was putting up good league numbers.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just tough for me to value a guy who pretty much came out of nowhere.
He slugged 459 against righties.
Okay, 459.
Actually, okay, batted 321.
321. So. All right, so that was a typo on my bad. So then forget what I just said about the platoons. I don't know. Like the reason why I worry about Barnes is because you kind of have to take him early. It's not like he's a late round pick, really. He's the 12th catcher off the board. They're all sort of late round picks after a while, but he is the 12th catcher off the board.
Right. What round is it? Like, what's the ADP?
Really late. 203rd, 204th. So in a one-catcher league, sure, if you want to wait till the end and take Barnes, great. Mm-hmm. Two-catcher league, you have to make a little bit more of an investment in him, it seems.
Yeah, probably.
You cool with Barnes? I think you have some... Is it the Grandal?
Yeah, I have...
Playing time thing?
If I don't think he's probably going to be drafted early enough to where he could be a bust, but I think he's a pretty good bust candidate.
Okay.
Because there is a chance that he plays 40% of the time and he's just almost useless.
Who's your favorite breakout, Heath, at catcher?
I'm going to go with a really old breakout, but I'll say Beef Wellington. And I've said this 2 or 3 times before, and it's because he hits the crap out of the baseball. I understand that he may have some deficiencies in other areas, but over the last 3 seasons, his hard contact rate, 38%, 39.8%, 39%. He's playing in Chicago, which is an outstanding environment for a hitter like him. And he's always had some playing time concerns, never got quite as many plate appearances as I would like. Their only other catcher is Omar Narvaez, and he's awful. If he can just stay healthy, I think he could get to that 450 at bat range, and he's a top 7 or 8 catcher in that case.
Yeah, Castillo basically coming off a career year at age 30. He'll be 31 in April. He batted .282 with 20 home runs. He only played 96 games. He slugged .490. That's awesome for a catcher. Scott, where did Wellington Castillo finish in points per game, if you wouldn't mind?
He was one of the names I mentioned. Okay, so 1, 2. I gotta skip over the guys who got like 12 at bats.
Sure.
2, 3, 4.
We're looking at Wellington Castillo here, who, you know, I
11th.
11th.
Yep.
I ripped Heath last year. I thought, because Heath had him as a, I don't know, sleeper breakout last year. I said, nah, I'm not feeling it with Wellington Castillo. Heath was right on that one. All right, so let's do a bust at catcher. Heath, who do you got?
It's so, and because of all the things that I have said to Scott about busts in the past and where they're being drafted, it's really hard for me to call a catcher a bust. If I was going to choose one, even though I have him ranked as the 5th best catcher in points leagues, it would probably be Salvador Perez.
Why?
Whoa.
His great, great skill has mostly been staying healthy and playing a lot. Ned Yost played him a lot because he is maybe the most valuable player on the Royals. They're not playing for anything this year. They're not playing for anything probably next year. And he's signed for the next 4 or 5 years. I'm not certain we can count on Salvador Perez to lead catchers in games played like he has most of the years of his career.
And he did have a DL stint last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and if he doesn't, he doesn't really stand out in a lot of areas. He's going to be hitting in one of the worst lineups in baseball, it looks like. Maybe if Eric Hosmer comes back and is hitting right in front of him, he'll have a few more RBI opportunities. You don't expect him to hit for a particularly high average. He does not walk. Yeah. So there is bust potential there.
Okay. You can pretty much expect something in the 260 range for Salvador Perez. He'll probably hit 24-ish home runs. I don't know. It seems like a reasonable projection. So he's good. But yes, Heath brings up good points about Salvador Perez. He's somewhat of an accumulator. Scott, a bust for you.
So there's nobody here who I think, like all positions being equal, I'm going to pick out as a bust. But
right.
Yadier Molina is just so old.
Right.
And they have Carson Kelly now in line to be his backup. He's the backup, and he's the heir apparent. He's a top catching prospect, very good defensively. I think the bat skills don't look too far off from like a Jonathan Lucroy or at least like a JT Realmuto type. So, you know, it's hard for me to envision a scenario where he just overtakes Yadier Molina because Molina's kind of like a face of the franchise type, but it's not totally far-fetched either.
I think it's easier to talk about busts when we get into ADP and see where these guys are going because Wilson Contreras is actually the second catcher off the board. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make an interesting bust case for Buster Posey. He's got bust in his name. That has to count for something.
I almost picked him just because for where you're drafting him, that can actually hurt you. Like Heath was saying, like you're not making a big investment in most of these guys, so if they're bad, who cares?
Yeah, he's going 61st overall, Buster Posey. Wilson Contreras is going 58th overall, and Gary Sanchez 22nd overall. All right, then. So last catcher note, probably the most important, I shouldn't have buried the lead here. Today is Russell Martin's birthday, so happy birthday, Russell Martin.
Is he 53?
I said it off the air. He is the generic brand, a generic version of Brian McCann, just a lot later. I don't think anybody agreed with me.
Does he have third base eligibility?
He doesn't. I don't know. I don't think so. He does according to Fantasy Pros. I don't know about our
And website. I did get the numbers backwards. He's 35.
He's 35, right.
So,
All right, here we go. So ADP. All right, Gary Sanchez is clearly number one. He's going 35 picks before Wilson Contreras. And let me ask you, do you guys see any bust potential for Gary Sanchez? Does anything concern you about him?
No. Just health. Just maybe assuming at bats that, assuming he's going to have a big advantage in at bats, and maybe it doesn't end up being that big now that they have Judge and Stanton. Presumably one of them's going to start a DH most every day. But just in terms of performance, I don't see a lot to be concerned about.
Okay. What do you think?
Because
I see. Look, I'm trying to nitpick, but I don't want to just say, oh, he's completely safe. I don't know. I see like 36.9% hard contact rate, 25.4% home run to fly ball ratio. That's a high home run to fly ball ratio.
He does play at Yankee Stadium. That helps a lot. Mm-hmm. But yes, he could have. Here is the, I guess, non-injury worst case scenario for Gary Sanchez, in my opinion. He could have a year where he has a 17 or 18% home run to fly ball rate. And so he loses what?
He had 33 homers last year.
33 and 520. And maybe let's just say he only gets 525 plate appearances again, which is still a ton for a catcher. So he hits 24 home runs, 25 home runs. And he has a bad BABIP here, which he's a catcher. He strikes out maybe 25% of the time. He hits 260 with 25 home runs. And all of a sudden, he looks a lot like Salvador Perez.
He could return like fourth round value, maybe instead of second round value. That's the real
Well, that's
risk.
Not fourth round value.
Yeah, it's lower than
that's,
fourth round.
That's like eighth round value.
But still, if the downside
that's
is
a bad,
Salvador
that's
Perez.
A bad, yeah.
Like it's,
I was kind of giving a different scenario, because he's going 22nd overall. I'm going to pull up the rest of ADP, unless you have it there, because I only have catchers. Let's see who he's going ahead of.
I would say if his ADP is 22nd overall and he gives you 260 with 25 home runs, then you could call him a bust.
I don't know. He's going just after Freddie Freeman, but Sanchez is going before Bumgarner, Bellinger, J.D. Martinez, Steven Strasburg, Josh Donaldson, George Springer, Severino, D. Gordon, etc. It doesn't seem outlandish to me, I guess. If he had gone before Freddie Freeman, that would seem a little outlandish to me. But all right, anyway, let's move on. Number two in ADP is Wilson Contreras, who has basically had the same slash line 2 years in a row. He'll be 26 years old in May. He's about the same age as Gary Sanchez. I don't know if there's anything concerning. It's that he was kind of streaky last year. First 57 games, he was bad. 239 average, 5 homers. Next 45 games, 1050 OPS. Then he went on the DL for a month and struggled. He's okay coming back.
The most concerning thing about Wilson Contreras for me is he has Joe Maddon as his manager. Mm-hmm. And at least at the start of last year, that was costing him a lot of playing time. Maddon likes to juggle the lineup as much as any manager in baseball. And Miguel Montero's backup was starting, you know, two out of every three games for a while. One out of every three games, or one out of every four. Some more often than the average backup catcher. That sort of started to change in the second half of the year, and then Contreras got hurt. But you know, then they got Alex Avila, and it seemed to start back again down the stretch. So I don't know why Maddon isn't more committed to putting him back there every day, but it limits the upside.
I mean, Chris Jimenez being the backup catcher could make Maddon more interested in putting him back there every day.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds worse than either Avila or Montero, at least what we thought Montero was at the time.
Well, let me ask you this, because Contreras and Posey are going within three picks of each other. If I give you the same amount of plate appearances, who are you taking, Contreras or Posey?
I'm still taking Posey.
Yeah, I think I am too, but that does eliminate my biggest concern for Contreras, so it becomes much closer.
And you both have Posey ahead of Contreras?
Yep.
Yeah. Do you both have Contreras third overall?
Yes.
Yes.
In both formats, yes. You do.
He used to have Gattis, but he's since moved Gattis down.
I dropped Gattis one spot in Roto, yes.
All right, so back to ADP. Yeah, I mean, we should talk about Posey. So early 60s, going in the beginning of the sixth round in a 12-team league. And he hit 320 with 12 home runs last year. 61 walks, 66 strikeouts, 34 doubles. It's a lot in 140 games. Buster Posey has been the number one or number two catcher in points leagues in six straight seasons. Top three in Roto in three straight seasons. I mean, he's a great source of batting average. It's just 12 home runs is very low, and he's 31, and he's played a ton of games. Is he is there Miguel Cabrera potential here for Buster Posey? How safe do you think Buster Posey is?
I think he's pretty safe. I mean, I would have said the same thing about Luke Roy last year, and, you know, he just stopped making any kind of quality contact at an age like, and Chris, that was one of Chris Towers' things last year, was just catchers, once they get on the wrong side of 30, goes pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're the same age, Posey and Lucroy, yeah, basically.
And it certainly played out that way with Lucroy. So, but at the same time, like, other than the fact that he's hitting 12 to 15 homers now instead of 20 to 25, like, I don't see a lot of warning signs in the batting line. And it's just, when you have a player who's that consistently a standout, and at this position he certainly is, it's hard for me to just say, to just guess, oh, this is the age where he's going to fall
there,
off.
There is a little bit more risk of him falling off. As far as the Miguel Cabrera thing, like, we have no explanation for really for what happened to Miguel Cabrera in terms of looking at the batting line. So I guess anybody is a candidate to have that type of year.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the home runs go, they're going to I would expect they'll bounce back a little bit. That was the lowest home run to fly ball rate of his career, and 4 points lower than his career average. So I expect like somewhere 15, 16 home runs maybe. But I think the big thing that you should see an increase is the combined number of runs in RBI. Because you go through the last four seasons, he was at 160, 170, 162, last year 139.
It's a big deal.
And he, and that, like, the runs part especially, he scored 62 runs with a 400 on base.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Okay, so that's Buster Posey. So again, Sanchez goes end of the second round. Wilson Contreras and Buster Posey going kind of like around 5-6 turn, the end of round 5, the beginning of round 6 in a 12-team league. We have a 46-pick gap before our next catcher comes off the board, and we have two catchers basically going back-to-back, JT Realmuto and Salvador Perez. Let me tell you something about JT Realmuto. If this guy gets traded, it could be huge for him. In 2016 at home, he slugged .359. In 2016 on the road, he slugged .494, batted .352. In 2017 at home, he slugged .351. In 2017 on the road, he slugged .535. He is a much better player.
Wow.
On the road, yeah. I didn't know that until that last night when I saw
neither
that.
Neither did I. I knew that about Yelich, but that sounds just as dramatic for Realmuto. And we've heard the Nationals mentioned as a possibility. We've heard the Astros mentioned, which would obviously ruin Brian McCann.
But, I mean, this is huge, because it's not just like home road, but if he stays with the Marlins, I don't want anything to do with him as the number four catcher off the board.
No chance.
Well, yeah, not as number four.
Yeah. And
that's not how either of us rank him. But
okay, so where do you – I know you don't. You have Realmuto 5 in points, Scott.
And
Roto. And Heath, you have him 7th in points and 7th in Roto. So, but it's just a huge difference, you know, going from probably the worst maybe the worst lineup of baseball to a – conceivably much better one and
but,
a better part.
But as I was saying before, there's no substitute for playing time at this position.
And he gets a lot of it.
It's right. Yeah.
And that would be almost certainly, if the Nationals or Astros sign JT Realmuto, he will play less there than he will in Miami.
Now, Realmuto was the number 3 catcher in points, number 5 in Roto last year. He was the number 109 hitter in points, number 112 hitter in Roto. So I guess my argument is, like, I just don't think that JT Realmuto is having enough of an impact on your fantasy team to justify any type of reach for him. And I don't know what exactly that reach would be. Like, I know, like, 8th round feel like a reach to me. But, oh, okay, where did I say he was going? 107th overall? Whatever. It's not that's 9th round, 10th round. It's not so bad. But it's just, like, it depends on who else is on the board. I'm never going to sacrifice taking a guy that I think has elite upside for a JT Realmuto, personally.
Yeah, that's kind of what that was. I think,
or a Salvador
almost
Perez,
the exact example I used as to why I'm not, you know, unless I happen to get Gary Sanchez where I want him or Buster Posey where I want him, it's probably not worth it, because you get into that JT Realmuto class where, yes, they're good for their position, but they're not really impactful players. And for where you'd have to draft them, you're giving up somebody who potentially is at some other position.
Heath, agree with this premise?
That is a really nice tier, though, with Realmuto, Perez, and Yachty, of basically the same guy. Play a
Gattis,
ton.
Gattis is in there, too.
Gattis is the exact opposite of those
he
guys.
He doesn't do what they do.
Gattis could finish anywhere from the number 2 catcher to number 20. Those guys are probably going to finish somewhere between 5 and 10.
Is it fair to say we know what to expect from Realmuto and Perez? Unless there's a trade.
Unless they get traded. Yeah. Those numbers you...
That's true. We don't know what to expect from Real Muto.
For Real Muto,
so there's huge upside for Real Muto, but you can also expect some of the counting stats to suffer if he stays with the Marlins. But a trade would be great for him. Perez, 108th overall, fifth catcher off the board. Evan Gattis, 149th overall. So let's drop down another 40 picks here to Gattis, 149th overall, and he's the sixth catcher off the board. People are just not prioritizing catchers. I think we've spoken enough about Gattis. If he gets a lot of playing time, he's going to be awesome. If he gets 400 at-bats, he's probably going to be top eight.
If he gets 400 at-bats, he'll probably be second at the position in home runs still.
Right. Okay, then that brings us to some more interesting players. Yadier Molina, 159th overall. A clear bust potential, as we already said. He's crazy old. But he was the number four catcher in points, number two in Roto. And he hit 18 home runs. Second most of his career last year. Yeah, I don't really know what to say about Yadi. He's another guy. I just don't really want him.
That's the thing. Nobody
I thought we already
wants
talked about him.
Nobody wants him. That's. I think I'm going to have a lot of shares in Yadier Molina because I think he basically is JT Real Muto. Now, I know I picked him as my bust because I had to pick a bust, and he's at an age where
sounds
that
like
could
you
happen.
Should pick Real Muto as your bust. He's going so much earlier than Molina. They're basically the same.
Except, yeah, okay. I mean, I think JT Real Muto is going to do what people expect him to do. I just think maybe it's not worth what they have to pay for him.
You think
maybe
Molina will do basically the same thing?
And I think Molina will do basically that, yeah. Except you can get him
50 picks later.
And right now he's in a much better lineup.
And he's still the seventh highest ADP among catchers. After that, all right, Mike Zunino, number eight. So Zunino, he had a really nice year. You guys don't even have him in your top 12, do you?
I don't.
I think I do in Roto and don't in points.
Okay. So let me just see where he finished. Zunino, sorry. You guys can talk. Number 8 in points, number 7 in Roto last year. With a .251 batting average, 25 homers, 39 walks, and 160 Ks. After being recalled... it wasn't much better. It was 33 walks and 130 Ks, but he did have a 921 OPS in 100 games after being recalled.
So we obsess over Joey Gallo's strikeout rate, Like every time we talk about Joey Gallo, can he overcome that strikeout rate to hit for a high enough average? His strikeout rate last year was 36.8. Mike Zunino's last year, 36.8. And he managed to hit .251, you know? And while he does have good power for a catcher, it's not Joey Gallo level. So I just don't think he's that good. And
Zunino.
Yeah, Zunino. Well, maybe not Gallo either, but definitely. Zunino.
He is generic riskier Evan Gattis.
Would you take Wellington Castillo or Mike Zunino?
I think I would take Castillo, but there's not... You know, I could be talked out of it.
I have them back to back, not just in my catcher rankings, but also in my top 300. Like, I feel a little better about what Castillo is going to do, but Zunino does have huge upside.
Okay, Ramos or Zunino?
Ramos.
Oh, Ramos easily. Yeah.
Ramos is looking right now like a pretty good value. 11th catcher off the board, but 30 picks after Zunino. So after Zunino, it is Wellington Castillo, and then Jonathan Lucroy. I think what's interesting about Lucroy is he basically, 2017 was terrible. So was 2015. And then he bounced back in 2016 and was one of the best catchers in fantasy. He was the number two catcher in points, number one in Roto. There are some batted ball data that shows it's different, that 2015 was better than 2017. But like just the raw numbers, the OPS was almost identical. I think it was 717 and 716. And in between, he had an outstanding season, .292 with 24 home runs. And he's the same age as Buster Posey, Jonathan Lucroy. So what do you think about him being the 10th catcher off the board? What do you think about Lucroy bouncing back?
I think there are other reasons you could excuse 2015. First of all, it didn't feel nearly as bad as 2017 because 2016 hadn't happened yet. You know, the
home run
power
spike.
Surge happened in the second half of 2015. So he wasn't playing, like those numbers weren't applied to the skewed environment that last year's numbers were. So that counts for a lot. He also was injured for part of 2015, and you know, you can excuse that. The batted ball trends, I mean, yeah, that certainly counts for something.
But we are talking about a guy who was one of the premier players at the position, Jonathan Lucroy. I'm surprised he's number 10 in ADP, because it seems like in our drafts, people don't want him. Like, you're sitting at the end of a draft, and you know, maybe in a 12-team league or a 10-team league, maybe Grandal and Barnes and McCann, maybe you can get them on the waiver wire. If that's the case, I've got no problem taking a shot on Lucroy, drafting him. Let's see what happens.
I don't mind
and
that.
And I'll replace him if I
have don't to. Mind that. Like, I just feel like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of hope for him. He was so weak last year. And what's funny is the strikeout rate's always been good for him. It was actually better than ever last year. So he was making tons of contact. And that's why I held out hope for so long last year. But it just got to a point, like, this guy's swing just isn't generating the power it used to. His ground ball percentage was through the roof. Maybe it was just a mechanical thing, and maybe he'll be able to figure that out. But
all that said, you guys have Lucroy in your top 12.
Yeah,
so
I know. Yeah, I do.
You know, it's worth a shot with the upside, especially if you feel like nobody's going to roster two catchers in a one catcher league.
Right. Yep.
Unless, especially if you feel like there are replacement players on waivers, like maybe Grandal or Chirinos or Castillo, Avila, who knows? Take a shot on Jonathan Lucroy. There's an obvious upside just because he's been a great player.
And he has shared some really cool training videos that he has done in the offseason. So I would expect that wherever he signs, he will be in the best shape of his life.
All right, so we got about 6-7 minutes left. So we've talked about our favorite sleepers, breakouts, and busts. I'm going to go a little bit quicker, kind of group guys together in ADP. Wilson Ramos, Austin Barnes, Yasmani Grandal. Brian McCann, right there. Okay, that's a really interesting group of four. Ramos, Barnes, Grandal, McCann. I think we can make a case. All of them are worthy of being your starting catcher in a 12-team league, but who is your favorite? Ramos, Barnes, Grandal, McCann, and who is your least favorite?
It's Barnes for the upside is my favorite, but obviously we understand the risk there. I think he and Wilson Ramos both are definitely ahead of the other two for me.
What do you think Barnes' upside is?
I think he could be the number two catcher in fantasy. I think he could be what Buster Posey used to be, I think.
Okay. I think Ramos has, like, Ramos could absolutely be the number two catcher in fantasy. He has been.
Yes, sure. Yep. It was kind of an oddity for the rest of his career, but part of the reason, like, no, I'm on board with the idea that Wilson Ramos could have a bounce back year and is undervalued and all of that, because, I mean, he was coming back from a torn ACL, kind of rushed back mid-season, but you look at a lot of what he did in 2017, you know, the underlying stats, apart from just the batting average, was very similar to 2016, when he had that year where he was a stud up there with Posey and Lucroy.
I really like your strategy, Heath, of waiting on Ramos. I think it's, you know, I think he's a guy that if I draft Wilson Ramos, first of all, I can get him late, and I'm never going to really be looking for an improvement at catcher. I'm just going to leave him in my lineup, and I may never make one catcher transaction the entire year if Wilson Ramos stays healthy. I don't expect greatness. I expect starter-worthy player, you know, all season.
Honestly, the only thing that I'm seeing that was different statistically for Ramos last year, and the things that matter, is he had a low BABIP.
Okay.
His BABIP was like 60 points lower than it was in 2016, when it was perfectly believable in 2016. It's not like it was skewed high or anything.
And he was the number three catcher in fantasy. Yep. So, Heath, who's your favorite and least favorite in that group? Barnes, Grandal, Ramos, McCann.
Ramos definitely the favorite. And I guess Grandal is my least favorite.
He's still good. He's still a good player.
That's the problem. Like,
he was a top 10 player at the position, 7th in points, 9th in Roto last year. And like we said earlier in the show, if you missed it, Dave Roberts has said in mid-February that Grandal, Yasmani had more playing time in at-bats last season, and I see that again. But Austin has earned the opportunities.
Yeah, and if it's 55-45 split even, I would like Grandal better than Barnes.
All right, let's go to 15 through 20 or so in catcher rankings. We're going to have some prospects coming up here. Jorge Alfaro for Philly. Robinson Chirinos, who had a really good OPS. I think it was OPS over 900 after the Lucroy trade, I'll tell you right now. It was 905. So it's Alfaro, Chirinos, Austin Hedges, Travis d'Arnaud.
It's my favorite name that's a complete sentence, by the way.
Yeah, Austin Hedges. Travis d'Arnaud, Chris Iannetta, Christian Vasquez. So all these guys are going ahead of Avila, the Braves guys, Russell Martin, Francisco Mejia, James McCann, Stephen Vogt. Who should be going at the 15 and beyond at catcher? Like, what do you think about this order? And we must talk about Alfaro and Mejia as well.
Well, Chirinos for sure. And yeah. McCann.
James McCann, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think...
I still have Avila there, even though the humidor.
Okay. But like, Hedges, no, right? And too early for d'Arnaud. I mean, Plawecki is better defensively. I mean, that's really going to be a split there. By the way, they're, like, very good friends.
Well, Avila's going to be in a big-time split. They love Mathis for his defense.
They do. You know, I'm fine with Iannetta as 19th. I know you guys don't have him ranked that way, but I feel like...
I've got him 22. It's fine.
Okay.
D'Arnaud is one of those guys who I'm always surprised when I look at the numbers. They're better than I think they look.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess it's playing time and health that have really held him back and probably will continue to hold him back.
All right, listen, I want you to talk about Mejia and Alfaro, but let me just say this last thing, because I see Russell Martin going, he is the 25th pitch, catcher off the board. Again, like I feel like he's going to put up similar numbers to Brian McCann. He didn't stay healthy last year. He's 35. But in 2015, he was a top four catcher. In 2016, Martin was a top eight catcher. And he scored more fantasy points per game in 2017 than he did in 2016 when he was a top eight catcher.
Yeah, so, but there was like a dreadful start at 2016, if you remember, that kind of skewed the numbers. Like last year, he was just not very good all season, and he's in the second to last year of his contract. What really concerns me for Russell Martin is since we're getting into some prospect talk here, Danny Jansen for the Blue Jays. Guy who stormed through the system last year, three different levels, hit .323 with a .400 on base percentage, more walks than strikeouts, .884 OPS. He made it all the way to AAA. Like, he's knocking on the door, and he may break it down this year. So that concerns me for Martin.
Okay. Talk to me about Mejia and Alfaro.
Mejia's the best catcher prospect in baseball, and we saw him a little in the majors at the end of last season. They actually worked some at third base this winter, so they're very interested in getting his bat in the lineup. He had his minor league numbers, batting average is ridiculous, and there's some power there too, but 2 years ago he had a 50-game hitting streak in the minors. 50 games.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the kind of hitting ability.
It's not 56, but it's pretty good. You know?
That's the kind of hitting ability we're talking about from a catcher, and he's right there.
When do you think he comes up?
Even if he comes up to play third base, like, you know, he's still catcher eligible. I would think he's going to be up in the first half at some point, maybe as early as, like, May.
Okay, Francisco Mejia for the Indians. And Alfaro's, you know, different boat, but still going pretty high.
A lot of raw power there. I've never been impressed by the minor league numbers, but I could have said the same for Gary Sanchez. I think strikeouts will hold Alfaro back in a way they haven't Sanchez, but he's supposed to have first crack at the Philly starting catcher job and, you know, was fairly productive last year with a lot of strikeouts. So, you know, again, that's a concern, but the little we saw of him in the majors, he was fairly productive. Chance Sisko, another rookie catcher, the Orioles, who's in the past had hit for high averages in the minors, actually had a terrible season last year, but apparently not so bad that they're not willing to give him a look. He's my least favorite of those three, but you don't want to forget about Chance Sisko.
All right, so to sum it up, tell me if this sounds right. I'm willing to reach. I don't want to reach for anyone ever, but sometimes I'm willing to reach for three catchers. Gary Sanchez, Buster Posey, Wellington, or Wilson Contreras. That is it. Anyone else on the board? Maybe Mejia in a two-catcher league. Anyone else on the board? You better love the value you're getting. Otherwise, you're going to be passing up better players at other positions that just are going to have much more of an impact on your fantasy team.
I think that's a good way to sum it up for me. I am willing to reach a little bit for Austin Barnes, but we're still talking about late teens there.
Heath?
Yeah, and I don't think late teens. That's the question, is what is reaching? But because I guess a lot of people would think I'm reaching for Evan Gattis because he's going in the early teens in some drafts, but in a two catcher league, I'm fine with taking him a lot earlier than that.
Yeah, if I love the value of somebody, and that sounds like a scenario where you love the value, and I might love the value at that point too.
And it's the same thing with Ramos. It's probably for me, if I have a pick at the 2-3 turn in a roto league, I'm going to probably try to take Gary Sanchez.
Okay.
If Buster Posey's there in the fourth, I'm really strongly considering taking Buster Posey.
In a points and a roto league?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's it for our catcher preview. Mailbag tomorrow. Send us your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Yeah. All right, I'm done. Goodbye.